Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins.
I had actually worked with JK before. I directed JK before, and he made the mistake of giving me his email one day.
Welcome to SinCast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the SinCast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And today we have a very special guest. It is writer-director Trent O'Donnell, whose movie Ride the Eagle is coming out in theaters on demand and digital on July 30th.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. You wrote this with Jake Johnson, who stars. And I know that you guys, I don't know if you had a sort of relationship before I'm drawing a blank for some reason. Is it New Girl?
Yeah, yeah. We did. Yeah. So Jake and I did have a relationship before. I directed quite a few episodes of New Girl. And we sort of became buddies there, and we became like, you know, sending ideas back and forth to each other. We'd actually written some things before we hadn't made. So we were kind of like, over the years, we became in sync with like writing stuff and you know, found that we had a similar tone and whatnot. And yeah, we just really wanted to actually make something. And that's kind of where this whole thing started.
What was the sort of the inspiration for you to take on this story?
Well, I mean, honestly, the actual inspiration was, first and foremost, that we were like just a couple of months into the pandemic, and neither of us had worked for a while, and we were thinking it's going to be like this for a while. Like, it would be fun to make something again. And we sort of got together with the idea of, let's spend 2 days together and just kick around some ideas and see if there's something that we knew we didn't want to do something about the pandemic, but what's something we can shoot safely? What favors can we ask? What locations do we have, and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's, you know, that's the honest answer about what we actually wanted to do first and foremost, which is it's much more just boring and pragmatic than we had a story that we were dying to tell and needed to tell. We wanted to make something. Like, that was where we started with this whole thing. But then the actual story that we landed on, about Leaf and Honey, sort of a mother and son story, we got to talking, and, you know, Jake and I have often complained and shared stories about our families and extended families. And this is sort of a merge of like stolen bits from each of our families about, you know, stupid falling outs that different relatives have had, and that kind of was the kicking off point for us.
So you've done a lot of TV. Is this your first feature?
It is, yeah. Yeah, it's my first.
Is it how different is it going, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've shot a few single cam things before, but like, how different is this experience than shooting TV?
It's all of the TV that I've shot has been single cam. So I've never done like multi-cam studio, and I don't think I'd be good at it. I don't think I'd be able to do it. But so in one sense, it's similar. Like, the way that I'm sort of like visually looking at a lot of it is similar to some TV I've done. But obviously none of this was studio. It was all location. This was mostly, and probably the funnest, this is the funnest thing I've ever shot, the funnest time I've had banking something. And I think it was because we had like absolute freedom. And we just sort of, Jake and I were big on momentum with stuff. It's so easy to start something and then not finish making something. And so we just wanted to keep this thing going and keep pushing and keep making it. And every little challenge that we came across, it was always up to us to solve it. Like, we never had to, you know, we never had to send pages to a studio or seek approval mm-hmm. from anyone. It was always just, it was up to us to do the whole thing, which was sort of great and freeing. And we made this little bespoke little crew that we weren't sort of, you know, held to a lot of the restrictions you have with a larger crew.
And your first feature out, you get Susan Sarandon and J.K. Simmons. That must have been pretty awesome.
Well, you know what? That was the pandemic, honestly. Like, we were so, it was hit at this right time where, like, I had actually worked with J.K. before. I directed J.K. before, mm-hmm. and he made the mistake of giving me his email one day. And so, yeah, like, I didn't go to an agent or a manager. I just emailed him directly and, like, sent him some pages. And he wrote back, like, I think I said it around 10 a.m. one morning. And he wrote back that afternoon and said, yeah, he would do it. And then I thought, okay, now we get into the dance of, like, when are you available and what? And mm-hmm. expecting it to be, I've got, you know, half a day in 2 months free or something like that. And he was, like, wide open. He's like, whenever you want to do it, I'm around. And we're like, this is great. And so, yeah, we got him for you know, he was incredible. And we paid him so little, and we made the whole thing was, like, so uncomfortable. We actually did, on the day we shot the J.K. Simmons stuff, we kind of, Jake and I, we had, like, he, because we shot J.K. before Susan, and up until that point it had just been us, and it'd been like very kind of indie filmmaking, no trailers, nothing, no catering, just like very, very bare bones. And then we panicked the morning of, like, J.K. We were like, I think he's used to trailers. I don't know if he's ever shot anything where he hasn't had a trailer. So we, like, panic hired a trailer, and he didn't use it, and it just sat there.
How many takes was the taste of vagina line? I can't imagine that you guys weren't just cracking up, like, yeah, every time he said that.
I mean, that guy is incredible. Like, he's such a pro that he never, like, and I actually love J.K. for comedy because he's such a ground.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
So he doesn't. If it doesn't feel like, if there's a line that feels too broad or gaggy, he just won't do it. And he will, everything he does is, like, it's so even and mm-hmm. just feels real, and it feels like a real person saying it. But I think we maybe did that 5 or 6 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He is so funny, and that it's hilarious to me that he is, because my wife and I are Law and Order fans. And so, like, we still to this day call him Skoda.
Yeah.
Because that's the first time we ever saw him on anything, you know?
Yeah,
and I know, but he's such a serious role.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, and he's incredible at that stuff. But his comedy is so grounded and truthful as well. Yeah.
Where did you shoot this?
We shot in LA. We shot mostly at Jake Johnson's houses. So Hollywood actor Jake Johnson owned most of the places that we shot it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's how you do it. Yeah, we shot it at his place in LA, and then the cabin was actually something that he had just bought, and that was up on the sort of the northern entrance of Yosemite.
Oh, really?
Awesome. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Which was pretty good.
I imagine you got to see some pretty good nature out there when you were shooting that. That was
it's incredible. And it's kind of like, you know, and I've lived in LA for nine and a bit years, and then have traveled to lots and lots of places. But I think Yosemite is maybe my favorite spot. I love it. I love it up there. And even during the pandemic, I went up there with my family, and we got really lucky in that we were just, like, staying in a little place outside the park and happened to be there the day that it opened. And so when they were limiting the number of people in, so we got to have, like, a cool day in there with no people around. But yeah, I love it up there.
Sort of getting back into the casting, was there ever a point, was Jake always going to be the star of this, or did he think maybe not doing it
No, he was always going to do it. We were really lucky with the casting and the timing, as I was saying. Like, we got everyone we asked said yes. So all of these people were like, Cleo King had done an animated series with Jake. Louise, who plays Gorka, is like a wonderful, funny actor in his own right. Also, was in a poker game with Jake.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then Darcy Carden, I'd worked with.
I love her so much.
She's the best and the nicest human you'll ever meet. And we became friends from me doing Good Place episodes, and I love working with her. So, honestly, it was, as opposed to like if you're doing a TV show and you're trying to put together a cast, you put aside a few months. I think we did all of ours in a day and a half. We got all these people really, really quick. And then Susan was the last piece of the pie to come together. But that was, and we didn't know her. We hadn't worked with her before, but I think Jake had like someone in his team represented Susan as well. So we had like a little in there, but, and she was just kind of, that was our big swing that we were like, that's who we had in mind. Let's just send it to her so we can like move on to the more realistic, people. And yeah,
we got her. I don't know if it's just me watch it, like, just because they are playing mother and son in the movie, but they kind of look alike in a way, I thought, at least.
Yeah, they do. I thought that.
Yeah.
You know, most of the, when did you shoot this? Like, was it in the height of the pandemic or was it?
Yeah, it was around like, it was like August, September. It was when we like knew we were well into it. And vaccine was like not really on the horizon. So it was the moment where it felt like, oh, this is going to last for a while. And people were speculating whether there'd be a vaccine, you know, that year, next year, the year after, sort of thing.
I think there's maybe, one or two scenes where there's actual, like, people who are in the same area as one another and everything. And I suppose you went through all that, you know, taking their temperature and
that type of stuff. We did. And we used, and even for, like, the principal, our principal block of shooting up in Yosemite, the whole crew and Jake, we all went to Dodger Stadium, we did a test at Dodger Stadium and then like waited for the results and just all stayed together and kept driving. And then we drove up there. So it was pretty nice. We had like a little bubble up there and we ate in every night. We didn't go anywhere other than we slept at the location. And yeah, it was pretty stinky, but it was a nice little reprieve from COVID for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. The story of this is that, you know, Leaf's mom, Honey, dies and she leaves this sort of conditional will that she puts in a video and says, you got to do these tasks in order to earn the cabin that she was living in, which, you know, the cabin is filled with like weed in every single compartment, which is a great little touch and everything. How did you come up with the rules? Were there any kind of tasks that you were like, nah, let's not do that? Were you choosing stuff basically for, you know, how easy they might be able to shoot, or what was the process behind all the different tasks he has to do in this?
We definitely workshopped a few different ideas for them, but ultimately, once we stumbled upon this idea of a conditional inheritance, which is mostly used, honestly, it's mostly like, you know, racist older people leaving their stuff to their children, usually in the condition that they like marry within their religion and stuff like that. So we read a few stories about these kind of weird things that happenings with inheritance. And then we like the idea, you know, Honey's character is, her background is she kind of gave a lot of her life to a pretty weird cult. She thought it was all, you know, she liked it at the time and thought she was doing the right thing. And that was sort of the thing that Leaf, you know, hated about his mom, was that she was mixed up with this cult. And we sort of like the idea in terms of the tasks that she gives her, that, you know, that they were somewhat based in the teachings of this cult, that so some of it was that she could have some redemption from it, that she got something out of this thing, even though she did make a mistake, that she would look back on and say, yeah, I made a mistake getting mixed up with it. That was sort of where they came from. We wanted them to make sense to Honey and be, in some ways, it's her forgiveness, even though she's already dead. Yeah, that was kind of the idea.
Is there not to, you don't have to get into anything deep or anything, but is there anything, I guess, did you guys have any problems with your mothers or anything, you know, when you were growing up? That may be way too personal of a question to ask, but
yeah, no, look, I didn't, both my parents had they had a lot of stuff and came from like tough upbringings. Mm-hmm. And they certainly, you know, like my mom and her mom and her mom, my grandmother had a big falling out, didn't speak. Mm. My grandmother died and that was it. So there was a bit of that in it for me. And I know Jake has similar kind of areas in his life as well. And I think we just approached it as like, you know, and it's so common in so many families. I know so many people, and I've seen so many in my extended family, because my mum is one of 10 as well, and there's all these sort of fractions and these insane petty grudges that can just like boil up, and then people just get into these competitions of like seeing, you know, as if you're going to get a prize at the end for holding the longest grudge. So we were interested by that and thought that that's something that is a pretty relatable thing for almost everyone's family in some degree.
Did you have, I mean, in these smaller independent movies, this usually doesn't happen, but is there any scenes that you had to cut that you didn't want to cut? Or I mean, I guess maybe even at the script phase that you had to cut?
Yeah, there was. We did cut a few things. We had a whole nother character that we were going to have, like Leaf kind of like living in the back of this place that he lived in. He lives in this sort of little cabiny thing on the outskirts of this big house in Pasadena. We were going to have that being a little bit more of a community. And there was another whole character there that was going to live there that we didn't actually shoot. And then we did cut a couple of scenes. Like we shot enough that we didn't have to we weren't married to every moment. There were a few little things that we did cut, and then we did a couple little pickups and reshoots and stuff like that. Like the editing process was the one thing, you know, I think we wrote this pretty quick and we went straight into producing it and shooting it, and then our edit was sort of more normal film time. Like we spent like 3-4 months cutting it.
Are there any scenes that were just like amazing that you just, I'm just gonna have to cut this?
We had a couple of moments that were more like, and in terms of why I like working with Jake is it, I probably, between the two of us, I maybe err a little bit more to the comedy stuff, and if I find something funny enough, I'll tend to leave it in. Whereas he's probably leans a little bit more truthful and grounded. So there's a few moments of just Leaf alone that we cut that I probably would have, I'm sure I left it in there for a few cuts before we got together. And then, you have to go through, like the JK scene was longer. Those scenes were kind of like still, and we were like, you know, you fall in love with them a little bit, then you have to spend a lot of time with them and really like go, what serves the story best and what is, we just can't be just fanning out on every line he gives and like, let's make it work for the story.
What was the hardest day on set for you?
The hardest day, I mean, all of the days at Yosemite were pretty hard because we were just grinding the whole day. Like a typical day for us on this film was we'd get up earlier than we wanted to every day. We had Judd Overton, who's a DP that I've worked with a lot and is just like, has an incredible eye, but is also such a committed, dedicated, artist really. He was like we're getting up first thing, so we'd be up before around sunrise, so we'd be ready to shoot for first light outside. Then we would spend a few hours outside, and then we'd wait till the sun was pretty overhead. We'd go back inside, have something to eat, and then we would shoot interior stuff in the house during the day. Then late afternoon, we would get ready and go back out for sort of that magic hour, wait till the sun's gone. Then we'd go inside, we'd have dinner. Jake and I would cook most nights. That was maybe our one real, like, you know, if we did it again, we were going, let's get someone to cook the food for us so we don't have to, like, work all day and make this terrible pasta for our crew. And then we, after dinner, we'd shoot night interiors. And so we'd go till like 11 o'clock at night. But everyone was invested in, you know, the small crew, everyone had some stake in it and some sort of ownership of the back end. So there was, we were all there as like a little troop, all kind of like with nothing else to do but make this movie. But those days were, yeah, like it was, by the end we were pretty exhausted because we were so small and we were ambitious with, like, we were lighting the exterior of the house and stuff. And that's hard to do with a small crew. So there was a lot of packing up lights and packing everything away at the end of every day. That often on a big show, you can pretty much, you call cut on the last shot of the day and you jump in your car and drive away.
Here's a silly question. What's it like working with the dog, man? The dog was awesome.
Oh, the dog was amazing.
Yeah, the dog was great. Look, that dog was really good. And I love dogs. I've always had dogs, but I've just had a string of, like, I've always had like pretty badly behaved dogs, and like they do scare me. And so often even when you work with dogs on TV or most animals, I feel like 90% of the time I have the animal trainer come up to me at the end of the day going, oh, I don't know what happened with Rex today. They're usually perfect. This is the worst day they've ever had.
Yeah.
Like, I just have, like, I always find that there's always an overpromise in what dogs can do. But this dog is, so that's Jake's dog, Nora. And Nora is a retired guide dog. So she was like a top level trained dog. She would pretty much only really respond to Jake, but yeah, she was great. Like, she was, yeah, you could get her to, he could get her to move her head up at certain points and bow her head down and just, yeah, follow or be left behind. And also he could, there's moments, because we didn't want it to be too sort of like a, you know, it is the main relationship for Leaf in the movie in terms of his friendship, but that's his main friendship relationship. But he didn't want it to be just a saccharine kind of, you know, sort of a Disney version of a man and his dog. So there's bits where he gets like shitty at his dog and he kind of, you know, he yells at his dog a little bit. And she was so good at those moments where Jake could just kind of like be really mean to her and he would, he would just sit through it. It was great.
I don't think this is a terrible spoiler, but if it is, then we'll cut this out. But there's a point where the dog goes missing.
Yeah.
And we all, I think anybody who's seen a movie like this realizes the dog is going to come back. So, but was it just a natural thing for that dog to come back to Jake and be like, hey, you're home. And, you know, and just, you know, be so happy that he's home. You didn't have to, like, you know, like keep the dog upstairs for like 3 hours or anything, you know, like waiting on her master to show back up or anything like that.
No, we were just like, she just did like six takes of every time, just like running with pure joy. And then and then other times we could get different levels with her. Like, there's scenes where, yeah, you know, they're sleeping in the same bed and just like getting her to lay down and then like not sleep and get up and wander around and stuff like that. Yeah, she was great. But yeah, she was truly very easy. Like, I actually said to Jake, you should make some money from Nora now and like get her into the game. And
oh my God, absolutely.
And he was like, no, Nora's now retired. So apparently she's retired.
I was so invested in that dog though. Like, I mean, I'm a dog person, but you know, a lot of the times in movies, I don't know, but in this one, I was like, cause when he met up with J.K. Simmons finally, and they had that great moment, I was like, yeah, this is really good, but where is the dog? Like, what happened to the dog?
Yep. That was the crux of it. But she was pretty. She was pretty great.
I actually don't think I have much else to ask you, unfortunately. I have recently started watching No Activity,
You see some great. There's some great JK stuff in No Activity. He's in most seasons. He comes in and just sort of crushes one episode, and often with these like incredible comic monologues and stuff. He's definitely incredible.
And I don't know how much I saw you directed a few episodes of it, so I don't know how involved you were in it. But I saw you worked on the new Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, so I did the pilot, and a couple of other episodes of it, but very much that's Tracy Wigfield, who I knew.
Yeah.
I knew through a friend, and I'd been in a room with her before, and I just loved her writing and thought she was great. So I kind of, I actually said, I remember like it was, I think when I originally agreed to go in for that, it was like Untitled Tracy Wigfield Project. And then I got,
and then I read
the script, and I kind of went in. It was a funny story because I went in, and usually I think with like reboots for that sort of thing, you go in and you just gush about how much you love the original and how much you want to bring it back to all that kind of stuff. And I was like, I didn't watch the original really. And it was kind of like the show that my younger sister was into. And I was like, yeah. And so I went in there with like, I pretty much went in there. I was like, I don't have any affection for the show, but I'll just try to like make it good on its own terms by today's standards. And, you know, she knows every episode backwards. So that was kind of my theory in going in.
Yeah. I watched it with my daughter, and like, I was young when the original came out. I mean, I was like early teens or whatever, late, you know, 12 years old or something. So, I mean, I watched it a little bit, but never really got that into it. But, this is funny. Like I don't know how well it's doing because it's on Peacock and I have no idea, you know, what it's doing, but anyone I can get to watch it, I'm like, you have to watch this. Like, no, this is really funny.
Yeah, I really like it. And those kids are like are the sweetest, and it's so fun.
That's good to hear.
It's one of the best things about like working on pilots and you getting to cast actors like that who it's a big opportunity, and it's all of those, all of the new casts are just the sweetest kids. And I'm so happy for them that I think it's going pretty well. It's been the show that my kids will watch as well.
Yeah.
Kind of the first thing really that I've done, other than like, I guess Good Place and some Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but, they really got into it as well.
Yeah. How was working on The Good Place? I don't know if we're ever going to get a show like that again on a network.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was incredible. It was obviously Mike Schur is just like a genius comedy writer and way too smart a person. But that was just the loveliest set. You know, Ted and Kristen are so nice, so decent people that everyone just followed suit. And yeah, that was so fun. That's the best thing about being, you know, because as an episodic TV director, you're in this sort of weird position where you're the director, so you're sort of the boss, but you're not really. Like, you're only there for so season generally, and there's all of the cast and the writers and the DP, they know the show inside and out. And so a lot of the time I feel like you're keeping the thing moving and bringing your own sensibility, different little moments and hopefully, you know, running to the tone of the show. But, a show like that, that was just like really fun to go back to every year and see that group of people.
It's nice to hear that Ted and Kristen are nice, because like, I just, if there's anybody that can't be an asshole, it's Ted Danson. I would be very upset to learn.
Can you imagine? It would just be the worst.
Like him and Mary Steenburgen just seem like, you know, they're like the couple, right?
So the best. I mean, yeah, and he has that reputation as well. Like Ted pretty much is known as the nicest guy, and he's just but he's just totally. you know, just a grounded, very nice, funny person that will, like, you know, looks you in the eye, remembers stuff, and is engaged when he talks to you.
I have heard that about TV shows, though. Like, the director comes in. TV's sort of a more writer's medium than director's medium and everything. But were you able to put any of your own personal touch into these shows, or is there anything that you remember specifically that you put into any of these shows that you were super proud of that you got in?
Most of the time, the things that I'm most proud of with episodic work is, because I love, more than anything, I love, like, comedy performance and working with actors. Like, I like to stand close to the actors. I don't really sit back at Village. I tend to stand and have an eye line to the actors. And often, you know, like, for example, like a show like The Good Place, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, Darcy Carden is an incredible improviser. And right. I like that sort of, if you're feeling like a moment when you're seeing it on its feet, like, that show was obviously very tightly scripted, but occasionally there'll be a little moment that you go, well, it's not playing as well as we'd imagined. And I think that's just the way that screen to TV or film works. Is even if you're the best writer in the world, you can't completely predict exactly what it's going to feel like on that day coming out of that person's mouth in this wardrobe, in the location, and everything about it. So it's the bits that I'm most kind of, like, I'd love to see was if I had an idea for an adjustment of a line or a joke in a moment, and I'd pitch that to an actor and we'd, like, run it and it would turn out and I'd put it in my cut and then it would stay in the cut and end up in the episode. Nice. They were kind of like,
that's cool.
Yeah, they were like great moments just to have those little pieces. And that generally would happen, like, you know, once or twice an episode, it'd be some little thing that I'd keep in there. And then other than that, you do get to, you know, obviously they have a lot healthier budget than we had for our film. So you can say you want a techno crane for a shot and stuff like that. And you can look at different interesting visual things you can do as well.
What else do you have on the horizon are you looking to get into more feature films, or do you like TV more, or what? So just anything?
Yeah. No, I would like to do more features. I think I'd always wanted to do my own, the way that, like, Jake and I did this. I sort of wanted to do one where I wasn't getting into a really long engagement of a studio thing or anything like that. Mostly because I've been reading feature scripts that I'll get sent and I just hadn't found any that I really connected mm-hmm. with. And it's hard I wanted to do a film, but if you read the premise and you have to, like, look at the material and go, I just don't think I can do the good version of this. But if you don't think you can make it good, you just can't start it, because it's going to be 18 months of your life trying to.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say with TV, I guess it's a little quicker, right? Like, it's, yeah. You know, a couple weeks or whatever.
It's a couple of weeks. Yeah. You don't really, I mean, often apart from a pilot, you don't really read the episode before you agree to do it. You just sort of, mm-hmm. even for a first season show, you'll just say, you look at who's doing it and who's in it, and you go, yep, I'll come and do one. And then often it's not till your first day that you actually read the script you're doing. But I always wanted to make a film myself. And, you know, Jake and I really enjoyed doing this, and we've got ideas for other films. And so that's certainly something I'd like to do in the future, for sure.
That would be awesome. He's a very good leading man. Yeah. When I don't know that he's really been given a lot of opportunity to do that, other than obviously New Girl. Yeah. But even that was kind of an ensemble, I would
it
say.
Was. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's actually, you know, even though he likes to project that he's just, like, you know, average Chicago guy, he's kind of a deep thinker with his acting and his performance, and he does take it seriously. And I think he often has, you know, I think he has a lot going on in his performance a lot of the time. It's there's usually a few thoughts in his head as he's delivering his lines.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because in Jurassic World, for instance, he's stealing scenes from Bryce Dallas Howard and Vincent D'Onofrio and stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, he's definitely got the chops. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not my story to tell, but I'm pretty sure that incredible moment that he, like, was it him and Lauren Lapkus where they go to kiss and then they don't, and she says she has a boyfriend, that was improvised, and that in the script it was just like the two nerdy characters make out.
Oh, wow.
And then they played with it. It's like, that's the funniest part of the movie.
It's one of the best moments in the movie for sure.
It's everyone's so aware of that trope, but it completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
That's awesome. Jonathan, do you have anything else to ask?
You just said that. I did notice, though, we were asking about future projects. I saw one you had. You were working with, looks like Rose, I don't know how to pronounce her name, Rose McIver, is that?
Rose McIver.
It's called Ghosts, I think. Yeah. I was just curious if there's anything you could talk about that. I was curious what that was.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing right now in Montreal.
Nice.
That's a pilot that... That's a pilot that we were shut down in like March 2020, literally the day before we were shooting. And then written by Joe Port and Joe Wiseman, but based on a UK show. And then we finally shot the pilot in late December last year. And now we're just about to start next week shooting the series. And we're up here in Montreal. And I'm up here with Rose, who's like an old friend. It's great.
Oh, that's cool. I was, I watched iZombie. I'm a fan of hers. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Is it a comedy though? Or is it supernatural? Okay. It's a comedy. Okay.
It's a comedy. Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Awesome.
Well, this has been great. The movie is Ride the Eagle. It comes out in theaters on demand and digital on July 30th. But we'd like to thank Trent O'Donnell for his time. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to do it for this interview. It's Chris Atkinson and Jonathan Wagons. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.